just to kind of get through a couple of things here. So, you know, when I look at pretty much any endeavor in parenting, I think, you know, we try to look at what works, what doesn't work, you know, what's the strategy to use, what consequence kind of pairs up with whatever circumstances we're dealing with. But I think at the end of the day, Luke maybe have alluded to this. Luke Pearson alluded to this a couple weeks ago. But I think ultimately what we seek is wisdom. You know, we seek, you know, the path that the Lord would have us take with our kids. You know, we seek some type of clarity and guidance on how to direct them in the right way and how to aim them in the proper direction. So as we open up, can somebody read James 1:5? And then before that, can somebody read Ecclesiastes 7:12? Somebody can do that one. That'll be the first one we'll do. And as you guys are flipping there, let me open this up in prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for the opportunity to just open up your word and seek the wisdom that we need to parent in a way that brings glory to you, parent in a way that raises up children that ultimately are devoted to serving you and loving you as well. Father, I just pray that you'll bless our efforts, that you'll honor our consistency and persistency, and that ultimately our focus will always be on you. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. All right, Ecclesiastes 7:12. May I have that one?
Yes, I do. For wisdom is a defense as money is a defense, but the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. Is that it?
Yeah, that was it. So wisdom gives life to those who have it. I think that's one of the things that we all seek as far as what we're not just here to amass like this string of things that we can say or clever comebacks or poignant circumstances or consequences that we can dole out. You know, hopefully we're here ultimately to seek some wisdom. And hopefully you understand that you're not here seeking my wisdom or Leslie's wisdom. You know, so we ultimately will turn to the Word of God just to make sure that we have that kind of that fixed point. Now, who had, so Ecclesiastes 7, I think the biblical consensus is that was written by King Solomon. Somewhere around the year 930 BC. So we're talking about 3,000 years ago that those words were written. So fast forward several hundred years. Who had James 1:5? Okay.
But if anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives all graciously and without reproach, and it will be given to him.
So if anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask God. So I think that's what we're here to do is we're here to kind of seek what God's path for all of this is as we endeavor down this road of parenting wherever we are in that stage where we have teenagers or young kids or maybe a mixture of the two or one or the other. I think it's important for us to understand that you know, there's always somewhere that we can turn. So do we need to backtrack? I think we had kind of finished up with the last week was the sliding glass door theory, how these kids can kind of always see through us. So we're going to hit a couple things today as we go through. You know, how do I keep my strong-willed child from pulling the family apart? This kind of addresses the circumstances of different scenarios where, you know, your parents, maybe the two biological parents are still married in the home. Maybe there's a situation where you have a single parent. Maybe there's a situation where you have a blended family. Those all bring their own challenges to them. So she addresses some of those situations. We won't spend a lot of time on any one of them particularly, but I think it's important to understand that some of these things really kind of transcend regardless of what your family situation is or what the makeup of the parenting unit looks like.
Because disagreement with parents, no matter the circumstances, like blended family, step family, you know, biological families, whatever, disagreement between the parents will, all of this will be null and void. Because if you're not on the same page, the parents, it's going to be really challenging to implement some of the strategies that we've talked about. So that's just something to keep in mind.
This requires a little bit of prior planning. Tack a little bit of this, I think, in week one or two, I can't remember when it was, but that it is important. It is important that Leslie and I are on the same page. And we don't often disagree to the point to where it's a major disagreement about things, but there have been times in the past where we've had to kind of get back together and you know, and say, okay, here's what I think, here's what I think, and most of the time we just do whatever Leslie says we should do, but I think there is always a discussion there of, and usually the conversation starts out something like this: I know you don't think this is a big deal, okay? And then I have to go from there and maybe either defend why I don't think it's a big deal, or maybe say, no, I do think it's a big deal, I just don't choose to react the same way that you do.
Normally it's Matt telling me, like, okay, the horse is dead. You've like beaten it to death.
That's right.
You don't need to say anything else. That's
exactly.
About that.
What is, I think General Patton said that. When the horse is dead, dismount.
And sometimes he just looks at me like when the boys aren't looking, he's just like,
yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I'm not quite ready for that yet. So I'm just gonna continue.
Yeah. Normally it's just something like less. You know, I'll just say that kind of in the middle of what she's saying. Yeah. I'll just be like, Les.
He really does. That happened the other day. It didn't stop me from talking, but he did say.
Made my point. It's all I can do, right? Can't make people do stuff.
That's right.
So there's a couple strategies. So it does say when there's a strategy disagreement, there's a couple things. Ask yourself, what's the point? Like, what are we trying to accomplish? That's the first blank, you know. And I think this is another one that's important to identify. She did come back. Awesome. Okay. We got her back.
Matt thought we ran April off.
Yeah, I thought we ran you off, April. We're good. She's back.
She can hear you.
We were about to call report you for some truancy. So,
I thought you should.
Yeah. I'm just glad.
She's like, maybe they'll give me a day off.
So what's the point? But this is another one. I think, how many areas of agreement can we define? You know, so let's talk about some of the things that we do agree upon. And then we can address some of the things. But this is another really important one, too.
Many times there's more things we agree on than we don't agree on. It just seems like the things we don't agree on tend to take up more time and space. So.
Yeah. And then the last one is, you know, what's worked in the past. Now, I'll say this before we kind of get into a couple of things here, because this is one of the conversations I think we've had. And fortunately, Leslie and I have always seen eye to eye on this, and that is... have you ever had a conversation with another parent, or perhaps have you thought this, and that is something that your kids were doing or wanted to do or had gotten caught doing, and you thought, you know, we were doing that same thing when we were kids, you know? We thought that same thing, and it's not right or wrong to think that. I'll just tell you how we've always discussed it, and that is, and I wrote this down so I can make sure, just because we did it as kids doesn't mean that it's appropriate for our children. Here's why. Because we wanted to hold our children to a higher standard. In other words, doesn't every parent want their kids to be better than they were? Right? So if we're just being okay with them doing and getting away with some of the same stuff, I'm not preaching to you, I'm just saying this is a conversation we had to have with ourselves. And that is, if we're just being okay with them being just like us, then is that also, doesn't seem like those two things go together. Is that also wanting them to be better than we were? And I don't think that our agreement was, no, it's not. So we wanted to hold them to a higher standard, and we weren't going to apologize for that. So when we had this conversation with them, we'd actually just had this conversation with Sam the other day, and I said, look, I said those same things, okay? But I also knew it was disrespectful when I was saying it, okay? But we're not going to just allow you guys to think that it's okay just to do things because you've seen it done before, okay? We have to hold ourselves to a higher standard. And if you don't understand what that standard is, then that's when we intervene and show you, here's what the standard looks like. So it allows us to go back to kind of some of the things that have worked in the past and maybe and remind them about some of the conversations that we've had in the past as well. So I think that's really kind of the baseline of where it starts. Then we'll get off into a couple of things about individual circumstances, like when the next one is, you know, what if the strong-willed child tries to play one parent off of the other?
Who's had that before?
Yeah.
Has that ever happened to you?
They identify the softy.
Yeah.
They identify the pushover, right? And what is, you always, like, I would think that the boys would consider me as being the one more approachable. But Leslie's like, why do they always come to me with this stuff? And I'm like, I honestly don't understand why they come to you with that stuff. If I was them, I would come to me.
Well, and it's like everyone, like, I think when you have boys too, like, everyone's calling the mom, the teachers, the youth pastor, the whoever, like, and I'm like, I actually told Jake last summer, who was it I was talking to? Did anyone go to camp last summer? Pat did. Oh, yeah. Well, Zachary, sweet Zachary, got in a little bit of trouble. I think he gets in trouble every time he goes to youth camp. Not anything major, like, well, it's major to me. Matt is like, I can't even talk to him about it because he's laughing so hard. But Zachary was pranking some of the kids and pushed some of their mattresses out the second story window. Just thought that would be a good idea to just push the mattresses out onto the ground outside. I don't know what he was doing.
But I didn't know he had it in him. Yeah, I was impressed.
That's what Benjamin said too. Yeah. I was like, so Jake calls me. I'm out of town because the boys were gone, so I went out of town, and he calls me to tell me what happened. And I actually said the words, I'm like, I need you to not call me about this stuff anymore. Can you just call Matt? Like, because I get every single call. I'm like, I don't handle this well. Just don't call me. Like, if it's not a big deal, first of all, if it's not a big deal, I don't need you to call me at all. Like, if I don't need to do anything or come get him or he's not hurt or talk to him, because I'm like, do I need to talk to him? No, I just wanted to let, I'm like, yeah, then just call Matt. Like, so it is. I got, yes, just stop calling. Lose my number. Everyone just lose my number.
And she may not find out about it if they call me. I mean, I'll hear it and forget about it.
Which would
it,
be fine.
To tell her.
Ignorance is bliss.
Right.
Ignorance is bliss.
To tell her. Which reminds me, I'm just kidding. So sometimes they'll try to play one parent off the other. And I think it's important for each parent to, the second one there is know your tendencies and know your blind spots. They're called blind spots for a reason, so sometimes it does take an objective opinion from your spouse to help identify some of those blind spots. In the conversation with Leslie and I, like I said, it usually goes like, Matt, this is a big deal. And so then I kind of know, okay, maybe this is something that I tend to overlook sometimes that I shouldn't. And the last one is plan ahead for those tough conversations. Be proactive. Knowing how to deal with it before it comes up, you know, the circumstances always probably create this nuance of what we have to deal with each circumstance a little bit different. But I think understanding, here's how we're going to approach this as we move forward. For us, we've always felt like, I think Leslie coined it. Was it you or Lynn that coined the phrase swift and severe? Yeah, so it was swift and severe. You know, for us, it was whatever it is, we're going to deal with it quickly, which requires you to have some conversations ahead of time so that it's not this, you know, week-long period of deliberation on what we're going to do, and they have this probationary period before the sentence is actually handed down. And so we tried to be, you know, as swift as possible with it and severe enough, you know, to curtail whatever it is that we were trying to curtail, probably to the point to where, I don't know, maybe we've had conversations in the past where we're like, maybe we erred on the side of being a little too harsh, but I don't think anybody died in the process. So
I don't typically think that. I think we should have done something. Matt's a little easier than me.
I mean, are you just going to get away with it? Right, so a couple suggestions here for the single parent. Find a parenting mentor, somebody perhaps that has or is currently, you know, parenting a strong-willed child. And then hopefully we've given you a little bit of framework of how to discern, like, what a strong-willed child is. This is one that I put a question mark beside, and I think it requires some discernment on your part, this trade for a day, and that is, you got a parent that has a strong-willed child, you know, just trade the kids for a day. Or maybe if nothing else, invite theirs over so that you can have some perspective, you know, on other strong-willed children, and then maybe get back together with the parents and have a discussion about it. But that's one of the things she suggests. We've never, whether we ever actually did that, although we've had, I think our kids have had friends that are strong-willed as well that we've had over. Then the blended family, I think one of the things that she identifies, which is extremely important, and that is a positive relationship among all the parties. My mom remarried when I was 14, and so with two stepsisters, and you know, that was important for everyone to kind of be on the same page, and there'd be a relationship there. She, this is where Leslie alluded to, a strong sense of unity between mom and dad is important. Find many opportunities to point out positive things about the kids, you know, from one parent to the next. No one likes to, you know, no one likes to hear their baby being called ugly. And so, you know, so if you got a blended family, I think it's important to focus on the things that are positive and make sure we identify that as much as possible. Because she points this out multiple times in the book, but no relationship equals no leverage. You know, if I have no relationship with this kid, then I have absolutely no leverage on trying to deal with their strong will and aim it and point it in the right direction. And then the last thing is talk about your future as a family. You know, plan for it. Talk about vacations you're going to go on. Maybe talk about things that are going to happen in a year's time. Maybe put up a year's calendar that shows all the things that are going to happen in the family. These are all just kind of blended family suggestions, which I know was important. Because again, it's that stability. It's that, you know, that understanding that the parent unit is their love is unconditional for each other, but also the love is unconditional for the kids too.
I think too. It says here in the book on page 128, she's talking about when parents don't agree. It's perfectly fine to, and me and Matt do this a lot. Like, if he's not home, because you're not always together, able to make decisions together about things. I say a lot of times, okay, I'll talk to your dad and then I'll let you know what we decided. And just coming back, I mean, it doesn't mean you wait 2 weeks to do that, but you can, don't always have to say it. This is hard for me to say immediately what's in my brain and comes out my mouth. So sometimes I have to like just pause on it because I tend to, it's like talking about knowing your blind side. I tend to overreact with the boys because they're usually doing really stupid stuff. And so I kind of like fly off the handle. So sometimes I just have to check it and just say, I'll talk to your dad. And then, you know, you just kind of give it a minute before you address it. And then, you know, you can go with your spouse. And especially if you're going to disagree or if you think you're going to disagree, it says discuss the situation in private and preferably in a calm and non-confrontational circumstance. So you do have to get together and then decide. And sometimes you have to give a little in an area that you may not normally do that, just so you can be on the same page about whatever the consequences or whatever the, you know, further action is going to be. So you can have those conversations in private and then just come back to them because they're not going to forget what they did.
So. And I think it's important to acknowledge that with each other. You know, I mean, Leslie did allude to the fact that I think what I usually try to do is say, okay, so, you know, what do you suggest, and see what she suggests, because I think a lot of times I probably tend to be a little softer than she is. And so it's good to hear her perspective on it. We can kind of move from there. And that's usually what I try to do. So doing something drastic, I think this is where, I mean, loving an angry child is just not easy. You know, it's probably one of the hardest things that we'll be called to do. Whether the circumstances are there's a divorce that's happened or whatever it is, a death in the family. I mean, loving an angry child in the midst of circumstances is a really, really difficult thing to do. So how do we know, you know, how do we know when the behavior's gone too far? I think first off, it's important to understand that it's going back several weeks ago, but the problem is not their strong will. The problem is how they use it and the direction that it's taken. The second one there is actually a direct quote from her. It says, when a major line is crossed, no amount of discipline and no motivational strategies can turn the tide. So I think there is a time where you have to look at it, and there's some specific areas there where we can kind of examine this and determine whether things have gone too far. And there's kind of the four major issues she points out, which are issues of physical safety, moral and spiritual issues, moral and spiritual values, rather. Is their behavior destructive to themselves, to property, to other people's property, to their property? And then the last one is dishonesty. Is there a pattern of dishonest behavior that, you know, they're exhibiting? And so I think those are some times where we can look at it and go, okay, if I've lost control, then what's my next course of action? And so I think those are kind of the four areas that kind of point out some things that we can look at and say, okay, you know, we've dealt with each one of these to some degree or another. Yeah, I think it was accurate for sure. Huh?
To some degree. Not all, but it's.
Yeah, to some degree. I mean, nothing, I don't think really any of them have been super severe. But yeah, I mean, each one of them, to some degree, not in all the boys, but. But I think they, you know, they're going to look differently with each one of our boys for sure. And so I think it's important just to kind of look at those as a guideline of where do I go next? You know, so the things to do next, first and foremost, pray and discuss. You know, so as you pray this, you know, we've always tried to make a point to pray with the boys too. So when we go in and talk about stuff and as we're handing down these consequences, you know, then the thing that we try to do also is to pray with them, and not just in these times, but, you know, specifically in these times, to, you know, let them know that we're seeking out something other than just your mother and I, you know, in our own brain power, coming up with some solutions on how we're supposed to live, on how we're supposed to behave, you know, that sort of thing. It's not just we're willy-nilly kind of picking things out of the air. So pray and discuss, and I think this is probably the most important one here, which is the most difficult one, and I think this is where it really derails things if we don't do it properly, and that is you got to deal with the issues in front of you. Blaming is not going to be productive, not really ever productive, but blaming at this point is not going to be productive. It certainly isn't productive to have some guilt on past things that perhaps we've missed. Missed opportunities, you know, looking back and lamenting on where things went wrong. And I think that there's a tendency to do that for sure. And there's definitely a temptation to want to do that and certainly many opportunities to do that. But I think, you know, dealing with what's in front of you, if they've missed curfew, you know, a handful of times, or if they've, you know, sneaked out of the house or whatever the case may be, these are, you know, drastic things that start to create bigger problems, and you know, you deal with what's in front of you, and then, you know, if there's a time and it's appropriate, then we can kind of go back and let's talk about the causation of it. But in the moment, I think it's important just to deal with what's in front of you.
And on the opposite side of that, though, not look too far in the future, like not think about just today. Like you don't always have to think about like what's going to happen if they continue to do this. Are they going to? I mean, I've said many times when the boys were long, I'm like, they're just going to grow up to be juvenile delinquents. They're all just going to be, like, in jail. And Matt was like, let's, like, back it up a little.
Let's just give them to make their bed.
Like, and so just try to not think, like, too far out. You know, I mean, you do have to think a little bit, but, like, not, you know, just you can easily, I know for me as a mom, like, just I can take a rabbit trail like nobody's business. So I can be in a whole another universe before too long. So just try not to do that.
Yeah, there's some practicality to it for sure. And just to make sure that we don't. So number one, I think it's the thing about thinking into the future is I think it really helps us not dwell in, you know, kind of what's going on. Let's kind of talk about what's the next step forward. Those mountain climbers, I can't remember. Leslie always watches these documentaries on the mountain climbers, and one of them I think said, when you're looking at summiting this, you know, this enormous piece of rock, you rarely are looking at the summit the whole time. You're just focusing on the next 6 feet, You know, so for when you're in it, when you're in the middle of it, I think that's probably the most important part. It's just to focus on the next 6 feet. And then deal with the next 6 feet after that comes. And so, where were we?
Decide what you need to accomplish.
Yeah, decide what needs to be accomplished there. And then if it's appropriate, find the right professional is the next one. So she writes out a couple of things here about that. So as we're looking forward, I'll just read a couple of things that she points out about finding the right professional. Is when you feel like you have a good match, a couple of questions to ask. What is the mission of the organization? You know, how will you control the behavior of my child? How will we know we've chosen the right program? You know, I think that's a good one to ask. Do you try to break the spirit or simply control the will, and how will you do that? What kind of training does your staff have that specifically addresses the needs and issues of strong-willed children? And then at what point will we decide the program has been a success or the program has accomplished its goals? I think those are things that good things to consider regardless of what you do. I mean, if you're choosing a school or you're choosing a daycare, I think those are all important questions to ask regardless. Seek several opinions. She offers that as well. Don't try to do it by yourself. And then the last one is, which again has been a recurring theme throughout the book, and that is love your strong-willed child and communicate that love as often as possible. Just to know we're standing there. What about holding on time? All right. We've got one last section here to kind of wrap up. Before we do that, any questions, any comments, any circumstances? Have we gone through some things where I know we went back to this several times with the young kids, but anything that we've gone over in the past, we can kind of, we're going to go back through and review. There's a kind of a little 10 tips at the end that will kind of help us kind of go back and have a little historical read back over the last 6 weeks. But before we move, anything else? Yes, sir.
So just going back to the one of the opening things you said where you were saying, well, it's not like this is anything different than I did when I was their age. And, you were talking about wanting to view it better. It just kind of hit me like, I'm not the standard.
Right.
Like, Jesus is the standard.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what I was doing or what Rachel was doing or whatever. Like, don't measure yourself up to Kristen Lodge. Trust me, that's a big mistake.
Yeah, it's and I think that's the theme that we've always had is, look, our fixed point in all of this is the Word of God. So, you know, so the standard you're being held to is certainly not, you know, we can, you know, for relatability purposes, I think that's the conversation that we've often had is, look, I get it. And I'll tell the boys that. It's like, look, I get it. You know, I get it. I understand the temptation to do that. I understand, you know, even from, you know, how men are wired in general. I understand that, okay? But, you know, here's the standard. And so I think it's important for us all to have this, you know, as much as we can, this very objective self-awareness and how our measuring stick is not anyone else. We actually just had this conversation with Sam.
Like literally last
yeah,
week.
Yeah, about comparison. It's like, it's not, I mean, is your goal just to not be the worst? You know, I mean, is your goal to just not be the worst behaved in class? I mean, is that the standard that you want to hold for yourself? You know, I don't think that's the standard that Christ has for us. You know, it's just to, you know, to not be the worst sinner in the world, you know. And so I think that, you know, it's an important thing to communicate throughout. And so some questions that we've always asked them, you know, about anything, and, you know, in general, I've mentioned that, you know, one of the things that we hold them to is that, you know, anything less than your best is unacceptable. And so regardless of what it is, you know, so the question is that the best you can do, whether it's they got a C in whatever chemistry or whatever Zachary's got right
now. Ponder family rule number
three. Ponder three, that's right. Number three is anything less than your best is unacceptable. So they come home with something and the question is that your best? And if they say, no, it's not, then the next question is always, are you okay with that? You know, are you okay with mailing it in? Are you okay with settling? You know, and if they say, well, in this situation, I am, you know, my next question is, well, do you actually believe that this is the only part of your life that you're ever just going to settle with, you know? And then the next question is, are you okay with that? You know, because again, if you walk down this road, then how you, what we always believe is how you do anything is how you do everything. So if you don't have this level of excellence and a standard for yourself, if I don't show you how to set that for yourself, most people don't wander through life and figure that stuff out on their own. Somebody has to come alongside them and kind of point that out to them at some point. And the goal of this is to find out how to do that with a strong-willed child. But I think the transcending message is that we have to find out how to do that regardless of what that person's personality is. Because chances are, a high percentage of the time, they're not going to be wired just like we are, right? So Leslie is not wired just like me. You know, Zachary is definitely not wired just like me. So in order to have those conversations with him as his father and communicate that I'm saying this out of love, I've got to find a way to communicate that to him in a way that not only he understands, not from a cerebral standpoint, understand the words you're saying, but that he receives it and internalizes it. Because otherwise, why am I going to waste my breath? Why am I going to, why am I going to just talk to make myself feel better if it's not accomplishing what I'm setting out to accomplish in the first place? So I don't know how we got off on that. That made me feel better, though.
Well, and it's like I told, you know, Sam's problem was, just as a relatable example, he had gotten in trouble in class, and we, like, his consequence was that he couldn't play in any more of the basketball games this year. So he could still go to practice, but not. And he was, like, so upset, and he was like, there's kids that act way worse than me that still get to play in the basketball game. And I was like, well, I agree with that, I'm sure. Some of the teachers probably agree with that also. But that's, first of all, not my problem. And second of all, we don't compare ourselves to the worst kid in the class or the worst one. So it's hard to implement those consequences, especially when it's something important to them. But, you know, trying to just teach him at 15 that, you know, our standard, like Skill said, our standard is not the worst kid on the basketball team that still gets to play in the games. Our standard is what the Lord has called us to do and what, you know, the Word says and what the Bible says. And, you know, so that it's a, consequences are hard even for parents. Like, I mean, it's, yes, they're the ones that are dealing with it, but you're also the ones dealing with it. And, you know, our kids tell us sometimes, like, not much, but it's like, they don't really say it, but they're the only ones that don't have a lot of things. And so it's like, and I tell them, it's hard. It's hard to be the only one. I get that. It's hard to be the only parent also. It's hard to be the only parent that says no. It's hard to be the only one that doesn't let you have social media. It's hard to be the one in class that can't access everything because there's phone restrictions on your phone. And it's even, you know, more difficult when the world is like coming down on them and trying to make them do all those things. Like, you know, make them use their phone. It's like, don't have your phone at school, but here's all the assignment that you need to do where you have to use your phone. Like, you know, so it's just, it's hard. So
they don't really care about that. So just prepare yourself for that.
Yeah.
They don't really, they're like, you know what? You should be able to handle that as the adult, right?
Yeah.
You need to focus on my problems, okay? My problems is I don't have the ability to communicate through Instagram, TikTok, or whatever else, you know, whatever else. And that's the problem of the day, you know? So they're like, look, let's just focus on what's in front of us, right? You said that. Just focus on what's in front of you. Here's what's in front of me.
Did you have a question? Doug,
I was just saying, a comment earlier when you talked about a SEAL's parents trading a kid for a day. But, I mean, I think that was for couples too. I mean, be wise of who you trade your kid with. But I mean, funny. I had a kid over our house a couple weeks ago, and we go over certain rules at the kitchen table. And one of my kids loved to put his arms in the chair and push it out. And I'm like, no. And you keep doing that, and I've got on the, it's like, you're going to stand next time you do it. And so sure enough, he did it. And the kid was over, and he had to stand to finish his dinner standing. And when he got home, his mom told me the next day, I love for him to come over to your house. He learns all kind of rules that I apply at my own house. And, you know, that's our standard. That's not their standard.
Sure.
But, you know, that there is benefit of letting your kids be with other people that you trust. They may hear something you've been telling them for 6 months, but now they hear it from somebody else, like the media stuff, like, you know, we're not the only family that had the rules.
Yeah. That's good.
And you know, your rules are not as bad as so-and-so's. You know, it leads for a lot of discussion, good and bad, but standard's God, not an oath, and we're not you.
That's right.
Standard's God, but, you know, it used to be, and I know I'm going back, it used to be people didn't raise their kids alone. You had grandparents right there, you had nieces and cousins, cousins, aunts, and everybody else in the world helping you. That's not necessarily the way it is now, but the church family is very important. That we're not alone. We are a family together working through these things. And sometimes it may be, hey, you mind letting my kids hang out with y'all for a day? I want them to hear some of the things y'all been saying that we also have been saying.
Right.
Different way of looking at it.
Yes.
Maybe
sure.
the boot camp, right?
Yeah, so we're all sending our kids to your house.
Yeah. Dixon, how to send
them to
Dixon.
They may be outside thinking I'll poop like a Oreo.
No, I think that's a good point, and that is that's how the church in the church in Acts was designed. You know, I mean, not to get off into any tangent,
but
there are needs that people have that were not designed to be handled by the government, that were not designed to be handled by anything else. They were designed to be handled by the church, and so when the church drops the ball, that's when that opens the door. It doesn't create a necessity. It opens the door for all of these other entities to intervene. And so if we would just take care of our own business, then, and that starts with our family. But that's why we're all here. We're trying to develop this community of parenting that that doesn't leave us like we're feeling like we're out on an island and have to do this all by ourselves. Anybody else? We transition into a couple of things here just to kind of look at how do we rebuild, or is it too late to restore a relationship? She takes this more from, or at least the examples she gives in the book was more from the standpoint of an adult child and the parent trying to mend a relationship that had been damaged because the parent was very insistent upon doing things their way with their strong-willed child. So a couple things here. One is she says it's never too late to say I'm sorry, but to say I'm sorry specifically about the methods that were used, not necessarily about the standard that was set. The standard of self-discipline, the standard of high moral character, the standard of respect for others, I don't think there's ever, standard of a good work ethic are not things that in them and of themselves are meaningless. They're obviously, we can all agree they're very meaningful, but I think the apology was from the standpoint of the methods that were used, the demand on always doing things their way. For a strong-willed child, that's a very difficult thing to operate under with any consistency and maintain the relationship. The second one is raising your strong-willed child takes supernatural strength and wisdom, which again requires a relationship with Christ to be able to do that. And then how do I rebuild? How do I bring back that prodigal? There's some suggestions I think that she wrote down from some strong-willed children. Start leaving notes. I alluded to this one, the second one earlier. Apologize for insisting on doing things your way. Don't let them scare you away or make you angry. Again, a couple weeks ago, they anger you, that equals they control you. Be consistent. And then find a way to reconnect, however that may look. Because sometimes, particularly with adult children, there's geography creates a problem as well. Maybe they don't live in the same city or whatever the case may be. So. Or if this is something with your parent. Then the last one is pray. And she spends the better part of the last chapter of the book talking about your relationship with Christ and how, two things every parent can possess, like right now in this moment, and that is a life holy and firmly committed to God. And then again, the overarching theme is the unconditional love for your child, and that's something that we can possess right now in the moment. Anything to add there, dear?
Nope.
All right, so we'll finish up with a couple of tips. This is bringing out their best at every age. The first one is, you know, value in their ability to see the world from a unique perspective. Remember that they aren't hardwired the way those of us that are compliant are hardwired. They see things differently. They like these challenges. You know, that's the second one there. They like these compelling problems to solve, not necessarily just a list of chores to do or activities to check off. They need to have some type of problem to solve. They like these endeavors. Zachary has always been one that we could hand off the, you know, fortunately, because I hate doing it, is that anytime we have something that we want to assemble, you know, Zachary likes to put things together. He likes to assemble it. And he likes to, you know, just kind of hand it off and let him go figure it out. He would get these Lego sets when he was little, and he would immediately go to his room, and he wouldn't. He would want to finish it. He would want to put whatever it was together and do it that day. You know, he didn't like to wait around and not put it together. That was kind of the thing that he liked to do. He liked the problems to solve. You know, ask for their input. This is this was one I think that we talked about, but sometimes this gets met with a little bit of resistance. I think when it's not put in the proper context, just from the standpoint of this is not an asking of your permission on how the household should be run. But there are certain things that strong-willed children, again, will kind of bristle up against if we don't keep them in the information loop. Here's what's going on. You know, what do you think is the best way? Here's what needs to be done. Going back to number two, here's the compelling problem that we need solved. What do you think is the best way to go about doing this? That's a simpler conversation to have as they get a little older, and they can have this intelligent conversation with them. When they're younger, it's more of a presenting of the problem and say, here's what I need help with. You know, can you help me with that? Or here's what we need to get done. Let's get that done, all right? You know, and you go from that standpoint. I think that's important just to understand, going back to, it's not the authority they have the problem with, it's the how the authority is communicated. Again, another overarching theme was protect a relationship. You won't get much without one. I think the question to ask is, you know, have I put the work into developing a relationship that they want to preserve? Here's the way I always look at it, and maybe it's just because this is the example that my brain tends to gravitate towards, is have I put enough deposits into that box so when it comes time to take a withdrawal, I've got something left? And so there's a lot that goes into that, but you know, with our children, it's the same way. It's very true with our relationships as a whole. And so we can't just fly around making withdrawals from all these relationships that we have and expect there to be anything left over if we're not putting those deposits in along the way, if we're not valuing the relationship in a manner that, and when it does come time to, with our children specifically, to say, all right, brother, you know, we got to take the phone away. We're going to pull you out of these basketball games for the rest of the year. And it's not an easy situation for him to hear. But we wanted something, again, to be severe enough that drove the point home. But if there's not a relationship that you have anything, there's no basis there, then essentially all it's doing is it's like metal grinding on metal. You know, there's no buffer there. It's an important thing to remember. Now, I think the word of caution there is to don't over-dramatize and think that everything we're going to do from a consequential standpoint is damaging the relationship. It goes back to what I said, and that is, you know, have we built up enough credits in that deposit box to take a withdrawal in a meaningful way? Smile more often. Humor is an unbelievably useful tool.
It's a really, I heard her in one of her talks one time saying that strong-willed kids, they don't get smiled at very often. So not even just with your own strong-willed child, like if you're a teacher or if you're whatever your job is, or, you know, if you have interact with kids and you know they're strong-willed, maybe just smile at them. Maybe just love them and give them a hug and tell them you're glad they're around. Because they don't, they're difficult sometimes, and they're harder for teachers. So teachers aren't necessarily smiling at them because they're usually giving them a problem. Like, you know, but just in your day-to-day life, if you see that, not even just with your own, I would recommend just loving on them a little bit.
Yeah, it's hard to smile at that face, right? You know?
Yeah.
And so sometimes that's the face they're making, and there's oftentimes, you know, so...
And they won't always respond, but they do feel it. They do know, they know the people that care about them, and you may not always know it, but they'll, like, I've talked to Zachary, and he'll say things like, oh, so-and-so said that, you know, he might not respond right away to them, but he does feel it and know.
Yeah. So the phrase we always use is, if you're happy, tell your face.
We do say that a lot.
It doesn't work with Leslie much, but.
Well, Sam is like, well, no, Sam is always so like his, just personality is very like Eeyore.
Yeah.
And I always feel like, Sam, why are you being so grouchy? He's like, you always say that. And he's like, I'm not grouchy. I'm like, well, then tell your face.
Tell your face. That's right. All right. So don't let them push you around, but don't push them around either. I think that's a good way to describe kind of what you've already kind of laid out, and that is, you know, it's you can point your finger at them and tell them to do it or else, but don't be surprised when they choose else. Speak to them respectfully but firmly. Again, this is one that gets met with some resistance sometimes, and I think there are times, again, going back to what I'd alluded to before, there are times to where the urgency of a situation doesn't happen very often, but the urgency of a situation doesn't necessarily create the opportunity for me to be extremely polite, okay? But there's a difference between being firm, okay, and always having this raised voice, veins popping sense of urgency about everything, okay? And so, being respectful but being firm, I think it's important to understand. This doesn't mean that every moment I'm going to be asking your permission, you know, about what I think should happen in every circumstance, particularly when they're little. And I think that we tried to toe that line with Zachary, particularly as we started to gain a greater understanding of how he was wired. Choose your battles. This is huge. Don't sweat the small stuff. Because if everything's a big deal, then eventually everything becomes a big deal. You know, give them some control over their own life and circumstances. You'll start to see more opportunities to do that as they get older, or at least we have. And then the last one is remind them how much you love them. Just remember, you're the experts. You're the experts of your own children. I think we said this in week one, and nothing's changed about that from then to now. You know your children better than anyone else, and so as we... You know, as we move forward with this, but I think maybe the one thing that I think Leslie and I wanted, as we were talking to Jared about doing this and you know, working out what to do, I think the one thing that we wanted to accomplish in all of this is, I think Doug even talked about it and Kat alluded to it in the beginning, and that is to have this unification not only between husband and wife or the parenting unit, but also just the unification of it is difficult sometimes as a parent when you're holding this standard of Christ and what the world says is normal and how those two things seem to contradict each other and what we understand the Word of God says is normal, to feel like you're out there on this parenting island, and that you know, your kids' friends' parents don't seem to have the same standard, or they don't seem to have the same desire to hold their kids to that standard. It's difficult to feel like that what you're doing is right in that moment, because everything else may be telling you different. So what we wanted to do, and what we told Jared that we felt like would be useful, is for there to be this sense of community, and that you know, we don't have to do this by ourselves. Doesn't necessarily mean that we all have to, it'd be cool if we did, but we don't all have to go out to dinner in one big round table and go through and discuss what your favorite parenting method is. But I think it's also important to know that to whatever your level of comfort is, that you can always pick up the phone And so in that discussion of mom and dad, you know, you can always pick up the phone and go, we've never dealt with this before. We've actually done these very same things. We seek out the wisdom of those that they're gone before us, or we feel like that they just have a good, clear picture of what God's will is for our kids. And we've sought out their opinions, and we sought out their input, and many times we followed it. And many times it either added to or completely replaced what we thought we were supposed to do, or what we thought we should do.
Does anyone have any questions? Anything?
There was a missed in a couple weeks. Didn't you know y'all for the...
Yes, rides? And there's also these little... They've been recording them. So yeah. We can always send you that, too, if you want to listen to them.
With the exception of last week. Jamie wasn't in town last week, and therefore I didn't try to find these little things.
So Jared's